in February of 21, I just randomly started. I just filmed a video, and I was like, okay, whatever. Oh, it was February 11th. And then February 15th, we were on our way to pick up my dog, my puppy at the time. She was, you know, 9 weeks old. And I started getting notifications on my phone, and I was like, oh, weird. I must have left somebody like a comment on YouTube or something. And all of a sudden I look and I'm like, whoa, my video is popping off. I was like, what do I do with this? And so I just like doubled down.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Marco Camerota. My next guest is a former pro opera singer turned voice actor turned YouTuber. He grew up loving video games and video game music after first discovering them when he was 7 years old. And since then, he's lived and breathed all things video games. He has a YouTube channel all about video game music, the beauty of modern composition, how it allows us to connect deeper to the games we love, and how we can better learn to understand ourselves through it and the experiences it provides. His name is Marco Camerota, sometimes known as Marco Meatball, and I've been looking forward to talking with him about both his musical influences and his love of sound, particularly when it comes to video games, for a long time now. We finally made it work. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Marco Camerota. Hey, Marco, thank you so much for joining me. It has been a long time since we've talked.
I know, I'm so sorry.
Hope you're doing really well.
Months, years, I think a year. Maybe
yeah.
Even more. Listen, I'm so sorry. I just always forget. It's not even personal. I just like constantly forgot.
I'm not taking it personal. I was persistent in your instant messages and didn't let it go.
No, I'm so glad. You know what? I've never been like quite this busy where like there's always something to do.
But that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean I'm thrilled that my life is the way it is right now, but it's like spending any time on social media that isn't like YouTube or sometimes X, depending on the day. It's out of sight, out of mind. It's really crazy. I've never been like that before. But anyway,
I totally get it. Yeah. I totally get it. You are a busy guy.
it's weird.
We'll get into that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But to start us off, because we talk about sound here, I wanted to ask you if you have an early memory of how sound moved you.
Yeah. You know, there are a couple like really beautiful moments in my life that stand out to me. And I think honestly, the one that comes to my brain first is I remember my grandmother would clean and I grew up in the United States, but my family is originally from Italy. And so we used to live with my grandparents when we were sort of like figuring out what our next steps were as a family. And I remember my grandmother cleaning and they had these old cassette tapes that had like, you know, your classic like Italian Neapolitan sort of popular thing. And I remember her cleaning and like just like humming or singing along. And even the sound of the accordion triggers like a deep sense of nostalgia for me when it comes to like that soundscape is really, really like poignant to me. So yeah, sure. I think that's definitely probably my, I mean, I'm sure there's earlier, but that's the one that comes to mind first.
That's a great one. I mean, our relatives, the people that we spend the most time with when we're growing up, are definitely instrumental in helping us figure out the world around us, and sound is a big part of that. So, yeah. Is that what got you into opera singing? Because, I mean, like, you were listening to all of that very early on, right? Yeah.
No, honestly, like, the whole opera thing was so random. It's so weird how I got into opera because... Well, so, I mean, I grew up in a musical home because my dad was a musician, and my grandparents were not, but, like, you know, there was enough, like, singing, like, that kind of stuff. And then it wasn't until my mom kicked me out of the house one summer, and she said, "You have to go do this theater camp." And I said, "Please don't."
Oh, my God. That's such a Gen X thing.
Theater's for girls. Yeah. She's a boomer. But
so
yeah,
Gen X. Just kick them out of the house. Yeah. They'll fend for themselves.
I don't know. Is she Gen X? She might be a boomer, but it doesn't matter. But like,
no, I'm talking about you.
Oh, I'm core millennial.
Oh, okay.
I will not be.
You're not in that category. Okay.
No,
okay. You got the spill down.
Yeah, I got the spill down. Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. No. Yeah. No. It's just immigrant parents.
Okay. Well, that'll work too.
That's the difference there. But that's funny. Yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly. So she kicked me out of the house. She was like, "You gotta go." I was like busy playing Final Fantasy and stuff. She's like, "You gotta go to this theater camp." And I was like, "Do I have to?" And then that was kind of the thing where I discovered that I had this like little bug in me of at the very least communicating. I don't know if it ever truly was like that musical theater or music itself was the thing, but the desire to communicate and express was the thing that sort of awakened through this like summer camp. And then I think that's what led me down the path of musical theater and eventually opera and now this current voiceover and then this current career, you know?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of transitions in your life, and they all seem to be sound related, which I think is awesome personally.
Oh, that's true. Actually.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like, as you say, communication is a core value in your life, and however you have to do that is where you find yourself. So from opera singing to voiceover and then to YouTube, like how did that happen? Because that's quite a transition.
Yeah, well, so in 2019, well, really 2018, I just graduated from, which was 7 years ago.
Time flies.
I know. I just graduated from this program that I was in Philadelphia, and it sort of all came kind of crumbling down really fast. And I went to Switzerland to study French because I was prepping for this gig in France that was going to be like 9 weeks and one of my bigger contracts and one of my, certainly my longest. 9 weeks overseas, it was 7 weeks, and then you came back in like October, so then you finished off the contract 2 weeks for like 2 weeks, 24 days. And when it all started to fall apart and I realized that it wasn't really sustainable, as I turned 30, I was 29 going into 30, I was like, shoot, what do I do? And I've always loved gaming. I've been a gamer since I was 7, so 30 years, most of my life. And it wasn't until I was like, oh, maybe I'll do like journalism or like video. Like, what do I do with like an opera degree? Like, what are my transferable skills? Like, what do I even offer? Like, what do I bring to the table?
Communication.
It ended up being communication. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, you know, at the time, my partner, you know, she was still willing to, you know, she was still actively pursuing the opera career. So I was like, well, what can I do where I can travel with her and also like do my gigs? And I was like, oh, well, voiceover still uses the core tenets of what I learned from opera, but, you know, I do love to, you know, do all that stuff. So I just doubled down. And started taking coachings, and should have taken a lot more, to be honest, about when I started. I was very I was convinced that my opera background was enough, which it wasn't.
I hear you on that. I did the same mistake when I started. Yeah, because I'm a singer as well, not an opera singer, but right. I've been a singer all my life. And yeah, you think the music is going to carry you through, but it's a different beast.
Yeah, it is. And then so I went and finished off that gig, and it was, that was November of 2019. I had made a demo in like September, and then I just, that was it. Literally, I remember this distinctly. The day I got back, I started cold calling people in the area I was living in.
Good for you.
Yeah, I just started, and I always hated that. Like, well, I'm a
Never call yourself a newbie.
It's terrible. I know, you shouldn't do it. But then it was interesting. So then the YouTube channel. So basically, I was at home. My partner and I had split, and my dad was actively dying. And I was like, okay, well, what am I doing here? Like, what am I? I was still like marketing every day for voiceover, and through the sort of, it sounds more romantic than it is, but through the grief process, I'd always considered starting a channel celebrating the music of video games, because all my friends that I kind of came up with in the opera days, like I always felt like I was the only one who was really engaged with video game music. And it was one of the things I predominantly listened to outside of opera all my life. Video game music was like a fundamental cornerstone of my young life, as my childhood. And so I just like randomly in February of 21, I just filmed a video and I was like, okay, whatever. Oh, it was February 11th. And then February 15th, we were on our way to pick up my dog, my puppy at the time. She was, you know, 9 weeks old. And I started getting notifications on my phone, and I was like, oh, weird. I must have left somebody like a comment on YouTube or something. And all of a sudden I look and I'm like, whoa, my video is popping off. I was like, what do I do with this? And so I just like doubled down. And at the time, this really popular video game, Elden Ring, had just come out, which is a, you know.
I remember Elden Ring. Yeah.
Yeah. It took the world by storm. It was quite the zeitgeist game. Mm-hmm. And I just doubled down, and I had a lot of free time because, you know, as you know, voiceover sort of, it comes when it comes, if it comes, if it doesn't come, so on and so forth. And
yeah, feast or famine.
And so I just doubled down, and I just like would take my nights, and, you know, I was always up anyway because Luna was a puppy. So it's, you know, and I was living with my mother at the time, and it's just crazy. I mean, like, I just did everything that was the most popular, and I just double tripled down, and that was how that YouTube channel started. And that, thankfully, you know, 3 years later, it's still like, I would literally was live streaming 2 minutes ago, and I will go back once we're done. And like, yeah, it's just,
I saw that actually. I have your notifications come up in my YouTube.
they announced a remaster for the Elder Scrolls Oblivion today, and no one was sure if it was actually going to release. And so they shadow dropped it, and I was there, and I was like, well, let me just start this thing. I have the podcast at one, but let me just hang on. So I stopped right as I was picking my class. So that's, I'm okay.
I'm honored.
Listen, there were 400 people there. I have to, you know, but anyway,
Hey, yeah.
I'm teasing. I was like, I'll be back in 2 hours.
I know we're all super busy and pulled in so many different directions these days, so I wanted to take a moment to celebrate and thank the people who have taken the time to review this podcast. Heather Former Hooter writes, amazing voice and knowledge. Jody's voice and knowledge of audio is impressive, and I'm not easily impressed. Thanks so much, Heather. I'm really glad you decided to check out this podcast, and I hope you'll keep listening. There's always more to come. But for now, let's get back to the show.
It's been, without getting too like, this isn't the question, but it definitely, like, this little YouTube channel, it's not always easy, but it has really become like the joy of my life. And I don't know how long I'll be able to ride the wave or how long I'll be doing it, because it's a very, like, it's fickle in its own way. You know, I don't know what will come next. I'm sure I'll have to reinvent again, but for now I'm really just loving this. And I still do voiceover when it comes through. But it's been pretty quiet, and honestly, it's okay. I'm so busy with everything else that I am doing for myself that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're about to get married, right?
That's in October. October. We're going to do a small, like, little celebration, but, you know,
yeah, but that's still a big step in life, right? I mean, it's not, yeah, you know,
thank God for Mary. I mean, like, she's, yeah. I, you know, to wake up next to her every day for the rest of my days is definitely like, It's a good thing.
Super happy for you. It's great that you have a partner that can help you through life and make all of this worthwhile. That's always nice.
I mean, I think I'd be okay if I was alone, but at the same time, like, she's been able to, she's really changed my life. And even my ex, I mean, my ex fiance also, like, brought so much to my life, and it's just, I feel very blessed that I've been in the situation to find Mary and to, you know, yeah, just like she really carries that torch that, you know, when my dad died, one of the things that, when I was talking with my grief counselor, one of the things that we were talking about was the idea of finding someone that can carry a torch, even though it won't be the same torch that person that passed carries, right? Because that person, it was like a bonfire, but it felt similar when I met Mary. And that was kind of how I knew. But yeah, so
that's your person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah. She's a miracle.
So I want to ask you something actually about, and maybe this will help other people too, but when did you decide to get grief counseling and how did that work for you?
I wanted to start literally the day that he passed, but okay. it requires a month afterwards. Okay. So, I don't know if every hospice offers it, but the hospice that I went to, it was sort of, I called and they were like, we'll get you set up. Now he had passed through the hospice process, but, at home, but we'd only been with hospice for like 3 days. So, I mean, in theory, anybody could call a hospice center and be like, hey, my so-and-so passed and, you know, I need help. And yeah, but they take a month because you want to sort of, the initial pain of the loss takes quite a while to even a month is nothing. And I mean, it took me about 7 months of active counseling in order to start to turn the page. And but that pain was so unbearable in the in between that it's crazy even now, like 2 years after, like that's a cornerstone. Oh, 3 years. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 3 years. It's a cornerstone of my life. It's like my ground zero. So,
sure. Well, there's no time limit on this stuff. I mean, grief lasts as long as it lasts. I mean,
yeah. And honestly, yeah. It's very interesting. Grief counseling is something everyone should do if possible. Just because grief is such a powerful and painful feeling. There's really no words to describe how bad it feels.
In your dealing with that, do you think that the video game music helps? Has there been like any music that has helped you through that or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was extremely cathartic there have been several tracks that I've listened to where I've like full or animations that I've like full blown mm-hmm. cried at. Two tracks from the Outer Wilds, 13.5 billion years. Is the one I think mostly. There was another track from a game called Disco Elysium that like is just ambience, and the ambience is just like dials up higher and higher and higher, and it's such a visceral experience because it's not really melodic. It's just very forward driving, but also spacious at the same time.
So it makes you feel an emotion without recognizing a melody per se.
And in truth, ambient music is there to present a mood rather than present, like melody is kind of like, you should feel this. Whereas like ambiance, as you know, it's like much more like of a delicate sort of surrounding experience. I find the differences between the two extremely interesting. Though I prefer melodic just because of its, you know, a singable melody or catchy phrase is so addictive.
Easier to follow, I guess. Yeah.
1,000,000%. 1,000,000% because it's the map. You know what I mean? If the map is the ambiance, then the melody is the like the pathway. You know, if you're looking at a map, it's like go here, go here, go here, right? It's the directions. But the ambiance is like the city. It's really interesting. I've never thought about that until right now. That's really interesting.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. I love the analogies that you make too, because video game music, I mean, I think a lot of people don't give it the respect that it deserves because there's a lot of really good video game music out there that is totally on its own as an outstanding composition.
Yeah.
And I know we had this discussion on your podcast.
Yeah, which I still need to edit.
You have a lot on your plate, I know. So yeah, I'm not pushing you or anything. We had a similar discussion.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that because it was very interesting to get into the visceral weeds of certain pieces of music and how you immediately react to them, which I'm not used to doing. And I'm certainly not used to doing in a live stream.
That was
a lot of fun. And it really, as with, I think, a lot of what you do on your channel, gave me an insight into how important the music is in video games. And it really, it makes the whole mood. There's a lot to it. And actually, I wanted to ask you, because I know that, well, we talk about audio branding here, mm-hmm. and video games have an audio brand. They most definitely do.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Yeah. So which of the audio brands of these video games do you maybe most remember or are impressed with the most? Is there a particular franchise?
Extremely. It's extremely easy. So first of all, I might as well add, like, with Oblivion literally being remastered today, the Elder Scrolls has a motif that literally I just heard remastered, if you will. That is so iconic. I mean, that's it.
Yes.
Everyone knows, I mean, for the most part.
Yeah. If you've played it.
If you've played it, yeah. For me, Final Fantasy, really, the audio branding of Final Fantasy, especially with the MMO, which stands for Massive Multiplayer Online RPG role-playing game, that one deviates and goes on like, well, not really. I mean, like, Final Fantasy is really based around classical and prog rock, and sometimes integrating the two in one setting. It's an incredible thing that most of my childhood was based around Final Fantasy sound. And I think, like, largely that's why I also gravitated towards being sensitive to sound and music, because of my experience with the prog rock of Final Fantasy and the synthesized, I forget the synthesizer that they use, but Nobuo Uematsu used, but it doesn't matter. And that tradition has more or less stayed pretty constant, sweeping orchestral pieces, hard rock ballads, you know, that's the real sound of that comes to mind first. Final Fantasy was a defining series in my life.
Sure, and it's been around for a really long time, so that helps as well.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy that my favorite Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy IX, just celebrated 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, they've been around for a really long time. I mean, you know, even if you're talking about, like, Mario Brothers or, you know,
forget it. I mean, that's like 35 years of Mario.
Yeah.
It's insane.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Insane.
Yeah,
it's insane.
We've all grown up with a lot of this stuff, especially, well, I'm less of a gamer than you are, by far, probably. I know more of the MMOs.
It's affected by proxy, though, yeah. It's affected you by proxy.
Yeah, yeah.
Or by position, yeah.
Yeah, but it becomes a part of your everyday life, because you end up hearing the soundtracks anyway, in a lot of cases. So it's really fascinating. I'm curious as to your thoughts on what it takes to make a really good piece of music for a video game, and what it would take to make a really good piece of music for a soundtrack. Do you think there's a difference?
There is. So I can't really speak on what it takes to make a great sound, because, or a great piece of music, because I think it's such a variable. It's such a variable subjective choice that for me, melody just depends. It depends on so many factors: mood, setting, place in the game. I mean, God, there's like so many variables, which is such an interesting thing about it too, is that there's no like clear cut way to be like, okay, I want a fast, happy song, or I want a, you know, fairly moderately paced slow piece that's contemplative, you know, like these composers are incredible because they get briefs like what I just described, and then they have to then turn that into like a 3-minute thing, and it's like, how? So I mean, it's interesting because I was listening to a soundtrack yesterday called Planetary Annihilation from a game that came out 11 years ago. And from the game Planetary Annihilation. And I was trying to put together what the scenarios were while listening to it, or why things are the way they are within the soundtrack. And when they told me that this piece happens when two planets collide into each other, because you can equip rocket boosters to launch a planet into your enemy's planet, I was like, oh, wow. So, or even better example, I just played a card game called Inscription. And Inscription, the soundtrack is moody, dark, kind of creepy at times.
For it's a card game?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually incredible.
okay.
They're called roguelike card games where the variables change every time. They're very, very common right now. And Inscription, which came out can't remember exactly when it came out, but the soundtrack is okay out of context. Like, we listened to it on Friday and it's like good. It's fine. But we're listening to it in game, it's like, oh, it serves its specific purpose.
Do you want to sound your absolute best when you're being interviewed on a podcast or when you're hosting your own show? I have a podcast episode and free downloadable worksheet called Sounding Your Best as a Podcast Guest off of the audiobrandingpodcast.com main page. Just click on the little square graphic to the left of the player displaying my podcast trailer. It gives you some comprehensive suggestions for where to start or for improving the sound you already have, including the type of microphones to consider and why, ideas for soundproofing your recording environment, and suggestions on how to get the best sound when you're being remotely recorded on services like Riverside FM or Squadcast. Don't let bad audio quality hold you back from being the best podcast guest or host you can be. And of course, if you happen to need voiceover for your intro and outro, feel free to get in touch. I'm happy to help. And now, back to the podcast.
So it's impossible for me to tell you like what my ideal piece is or even how to make it, because which opens up a broader conversation about, like, you know, what do I even do on the channel and why is the channel important? And you know, for me, it's really about the emotional integrity of a piece.
Sure.
Versus the like nitty gritty technical aspects, which I think people tend to get hung up on, but it's so, the.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you, so like, what is your intention with the channel? You know, giving people the emotional intelligence to judge these kinds of things for themselves or beyond that?
Well, the question to me that's the most important part is, what is active listening? And how do we listen with intention? And furthermore, how do we decipher what a composer wants us to feel or how do we connect to the music that we already like or don't like better or more plainly or more clearly? There are dozens of channels that lean into the compositional integrity of a piece of music, but, and they touch on the emotions, but mine is solely on, well, the strings are moving down in this way as the horns are, you know, prolonging their sound. What does that represent? Why do we do that? What would the composer want to be saying with that? Or listen to how somber or morose, or why are there no lyrics, or why are there lyrics, but they're in gibberish, or they're not actually in a language. What is the benefit of that? So it's really about the discussion of music. And I choose a bunch of different ways. I've had to evolve the channel quite a bit since I sort of did all the greatest hits that first year.
I get it. Yeah.
So it's actually been a lot more fun, even though it's a lot more work to be like, you know, like today I have a video coming out later this evening if I can pry my cold dead hands off of Oblivion once I get back into there.
it's hard.
Yeah. I told the chat, I was like, it's over for me. Thank God I have a runway of videos, because for the next 2 weeks, I'm out of commission.
You're
like,
just,
we're playing
yeah.
this every day. but I was like, you know, I'm ranking all of the Mario main themes. Because it doesn't matter if it's a ranking video, you know, listening to the greatest XYZ, you know, talking about specific genres, like all that matters is that. And this is what I try. My regulars that come to the channel, I think, really understand what I'm trying to do. And I think really appreciate it. And it's been incredible. I mean, like, you know, people tell me that they've gone to music school because of me. You know,
oh, how nice.
I saw even saying that feels so conceited, but people have literally said it.
It's an honor.
I know. And I'm like, me? You know, and it does, it can backfire. Like, there have been plenty of people that have been upset at me for various things, whether they're justified or not is a different question. But,
well, if you have a big enough channel, there's going to be people who are going to be upset.
Yeah. Oh,
I imagine.
When I happen to be on Twitter, I hate calling it X, on Twitter, and I end up seeing that I'm blocked by somebody, I'm like, oh, I wonder what I said to them to make them want to block me. That's so interesting. And you kind of just have to like be like, okay, well, anyway.
Social media is weird, and YouTube is even weirder.
I know.
It really is.
It's very strange. It's very strange.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.